You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky and a special guest, our good friend Mina Kimes, is joining us. Mina, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me. This is such a pleasure. People who listen to my show, Mina Kimes' show featuring Lenny, know you from your appearances on that over the years, so I'm excited to switch it up.
Oh, yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it.
I want to start because we got some things we're going to get to here, but we were just talking before we came on and I want to start right there. What is the conversation you are most sick of having at this point in time?
It's probably Daniels versus May, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the one. I think if I had to keep a counter on the number of segments I've done on ESPN across various platforms, that's probably the leader in the clubhouse, the one that I've done the most.
Okay, well, since it's the first time that you've been on Move the Sticks, what is your take on Daniels versus May? I just have to hear.
That is hard.
Myself. I haven't had an opportunity
to
check
it's
it out.
Trap.
What are we thinking?
Actually, this is what I know. I just complained about it. That is literally what I actually had DJ on my show to talk about, which was the quarterbacks. Although we did not really spend the entire time debating them, we talked more about their tools and fits and things like that. I'll say this. I like them both a lot. I know it's a little bit of a cop-out, but I'm not one of those people who thinks, any team picking at two, the Commanders obviously, would be making a grievous mistake if they were to go with Daniels over May or vice versa. I think they both have a lot to like. I actually have a slight preference for May, as Daniel knows, which apparently is like a wildly non-consensus view these days.
I think we're the only two left in that. Nate Tice is with
Nate Tice is leading the May charge. And that might be, guys, because I just have such an affinity, and I think it's so important to have that off-platform throwing ability, that creative sort of those second reaction throws that you see on May's tape. It also might be, just speaking personally, the two quarterbacks who I've been the wrongest about over the last 6 years are Josh Allen and Justin Herbert. So maybe I'm just afraid of missing on someone who has those types of tools again, as well as some concerns about Daniel's size. But I do really like him. I think he's going to be a good pro.
I've never asked you this. I want to. Bucky just took you right there too. By the way, I love that. That's the jumping off point here. But I always feel like, and Buck and I've talked about this, where like the successful teams that he's been around and how they were built and how they were formed, it somehow indicates what we might think of how to build a team going forward. Not that there aren't other ways to do it, but I know and how like what I like in players from my time is probably shaped from the time in Baltimore. I'm curious, as someone who grew up and has seen Seattle and watched that organization through the good and the bad, but specifically the good, has that informed anything? I know you watch everybody, you study everybody, but that one in particular, has how they've had success informed what you think of players?
It's a great question, because I think so much of the success of the Seahawks through the Pete Carroll regime, which is what you're talking about, really, I mean, I feel like he doesn't get enough credit for all the winning seasons that they put together there. So much of that has to do with coaching and culture, which don't really apply to the draft, which, I mean, we were talking about team building and traits and roster construction and positional value. And when I look at Pete's success, A lot of it isn't necessarily immediately transferable. They did have certain traits that you guys, I'm sure you know very well, you guys know that they looked for in defensive players, but then they've kind of moved off of some of those tendencies. So they're, when you look at the players the Seahawks, John Schneider has drafted over the last 3 years, very different profiles from the years when I think it was the Seahawks who probably made Spark a household name in our nerdy circles, but they care so much about those athletic traits and a certain profile of DB or pass rusher or whatever. And they've actually pivoted off that recently. So maybe if anything, it's not being too rigid about your adherence to certain measurables and certain things that have to be, a certain way when you draft players.
No, I think it's so interesting because I feel like, meaning when I hear you talk about the Seahawks, it kind of goes when I had a huge affinity for Pete Carroll and what they were doing. And I think one of the things that DJ and I always talk about is it's not only who you pick, but it's the developmental plan that you have in place. And so continue to use that Seattle model. Like, what do you feel like about young players and getting them on the field right away? Because the Seahawks were unafraid to put young players on the field right away and it worked for them.
Yeah. I think that position matters a lot when you look at the young players that the Seahawks played right away. It was a lot of the young corners and safeties, and actually it's been their edge rushers who have had a harder time seeing the field in recent years. Not in first round picks, but a lot of second and third rounder types. I would have to say it's probably unsurprising when you consider that that aligns with Pete Carroll's expertise, which is teaching, DB play. But then, it's funny, Bucky, and this kind of actually maybe is a segue to something that Daniel said he wanted to talk about today. You look at a player like Bobby Wagner, who saw the field very quickly in Seattle, but that was a different time, right? Mm-hmm. Like playing linebacker in 2012 was so different from playing linebacker in 2024. And you do wonder, okay, if Bobby Wagner was drafted in the NFL right now, would he play immediately? Would he be as effective immediately? Would his development curve look different? I do think some of it had to do with just the style of football being played at the time.
So Mina teased it because this is like one of the nerdy topics that I wanted to talk about, because I was talking with an executive last night on this particular topic. We're talking about, all right, the running back thing, the ship is officially sailed, right? We not only aren't going to see one in one, there's a good chance we don't see a running back in two. Like, the third round could be the first running back taken this year. And some of that's just that we don't have the premier guys. I mean, last year we had legit dudes at the top. We don't have those guys here. I think that's, obviously a big part of it. But his point was, is that going to have an impact on their mirror position? If you look at every position offensively and talk about their mirror position and off the ball linebackers, his thing was, we're not going to see an off-the-ball linebacker more than likely go in the first round of this draft. I pushed back a little bit and said, look, I don't think we have those guys, So I to me, it's some of it is just we don't have the premier players at those positions in this particular draft. And if you look at the two teams that played as well defensively as anybody last year, the 49ers invested heavily in off-the-ball linebacker. The Ravens invested heavily in terms of the trade for Roquan Smith. Those teams have valued off-the-ball linebackers, and it served them well. So to get us into that conversation, I'm wondering if you do see a connection, and do you buy into the mirroring department? If we're seeing defensive tackles and their top elite guys explode in value, are we going to then see more of an emphasis on, okay, we got to identify, develop, and pay interior offensive linemen? Do you believe in the mirror theory?
I believe in it when it comes to the trenches, when you're looking at guard pay and these defensive tackles. I do think there's something to that. I think it also just happens to align with the fact that there's just so many good defensive tackles in the NFL right now. Like, we can point to the guys who have gotten paid, whether it's Wilkins recently, Quinnen Williams, Simmons in Baltimore, Madubuike. They're all awesome players. So that's not just about like the football meta necessarily and the quickest path to the quarterback and all. They're just really good players that all happen to be get paid at the same time. So I do think when you look at those players and how many good defensive tackles there are in the league, it makes sense that teams want to invest in the interior of the offensive line. I think that makes sense there. I think with linebacker, it's different. To me, I wouldn't say the devaluation of the position, but the lack of success we've had with rookie linebackers, not just rookie linebackers, like second year linebackers. Yeah. It's taking guys a while to develop. To me, that's more just about offensive football and the fact that, you know, so many, seems like every offensive coordinator in the NFL makes it their personal mission to victimize the linebackers.
Isolate and attack.
Yeah. I mean, you know, RPOs and all the motions and everything that's happening in football right now is really oriented towards making those second level defenders wrong. And I think when you come into the league, it's always been hard to play the position, obviously mentally, but it's harder than it's ever been, especially coming from college where you're just not asked to juggle all of those things. You mentioned Roquan Smith, by the way. My buddy Bill Barnwell and I did a pod where we visited the 2018 draft, which was really, really fun. And I'll say this, Bucky, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. Like, he's the last off-ball linebacker I can remember where I felt like, yeah, no doubt. Like, you know, right, Roquan at Georgia, he can go sideline to sideline, he can cover, he can tackle, he can do it all. I can't really, like, there's been players who have been good. Edmonds was in that draft, but I don't think there's been a linebacker like that. And that was 6 years ago where I really felt that degree of confidence coming out of the draft.
Yeah, I think the game has changed at the collegiate level where I think we're getting a different brand of player. Like before, like 2018, we still were seeing a little bit of old school. Yeah, we had spread, but from a defensive standpoint, you still had the thumpers. You still had to run and chase guys. Then college football went through this iteration where they were making these safeties, linebackers, and you're trying to get all these little guys on the field. And then they come into the league and they get beaten up. I'm hopeful that maybe the tide is turning where maybe we'll see some more traditional linebackers. But I just think all the different specialization and substitution patterns have made it very, very hard to find an off-ball linebacker that can stay on the field and actually play, which is why the Niners and the Ravens, to me, have significant advantages over other teams because they have true linebackers that can kind of play in an old school style.
I always look at guys, if certain players hit, how it could have changed the trajectory of how we evaluate players. And why is his name going to escape me from Clemson from a few years ago? I have so many.
Isaiah Simmons.
I firmly believe if Isaiah Simmons hit big, we would have a whole new wave of, hey, we're just going to find, we want off the ball. Give me 6'4", long, fast, rangy. I don't really care about take on, but I'm going to be able to cover tight ends. I'm going to be able to match him up. I can rush him. I can do all these different things. Like, that is the North Star of where this positionless football is headed. And that's kind of what the college game is going to start looking for, which is then going to give us these types of players in the NFL. And obviously, it didn't work out. But there was, when we had Vander Esch, who was, when he was healthy and was young, was like, okay. Edmonds, who has been a little up and down, but then obviously got paid. It was like, okay, maybe this is the new thing. This is kind of where we're going. Mm-hmm. And this is how this position is going to evolve and change. And that hasn't really happened. And then you've get kind of the, you know, the Fred's long. I mean, Fred Warner's long and rangy, but he's not like he's 6'5". And then you have Roquan. So kind of the guys who are doing it, the really, really good players still kind of feel more traditional. But I think that's fascinating, Mina, when you look at some guys and you're like, man, if this one hits, this changes it. Like, this kind of changes how this works.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking at my notes about this class, and it's funny because I don't think I don't feel the way I did about Roquan about any of the guys drafted in recent years. I certainly don't feel that way about this class, but I do wonder, like, if you're comparing, let's say, two players like Junior Colson out of Michigan and Edgar Cooper out of Texas A&M, Colson to me is the more polished player. He's a better tackler. He's probably the guy you see starting a little bit sooner. But because of the development curve we've been talking about and how the likelihood that maybe you're drafting a guy and not expecting him to play immediately, maybe you're more likely to bet on the athletic talents and traits of an just knowing that you can capture that upside and that you're not going to play, you don't want to play him immediately.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting because DJ and I have talked a lot about Peyton Wilson and how he may share some of the traits that we saw from Luke Kuechly, but then the injury history kind of prevent us from going all the way in. I think what we've seen the last 10 years between the running back and the linebacker is the most fascinating thing that I can remember seeing. The fact that we're doing it by committee in both situations is just different. And DJ talking about Isaiah Simmons and how that kind of let us down. I think part of the reason, and I've talked to coaches about this, is they never know which room to go to when it's time to go to position meetings. So they kind of never master one thing. And if you have a guy who's built like a linebacker, but in his mind, he feels like he's a safety, it doesn't work. And that was some of the conversation that I got back on Isaiah Simmons.
That makes sense. And maybe just because there's so much on your plate and it's just mentally so difficult, that idea of positionless football, it's really more applicable to the Kyle Hamiltons of the world, mm-hmm. to a lesser extent, the Dever Witherspoons, potentially the Cooper DeJeans, whatever. Like you're talking mm-hmm. about DBs, whereas with linebackers, maybe it's just not feasible, like Bucky was saying, to ask a young player to come in and wear multiple hats if he's also being asked to play, you know, the mic.
Yeah. No, last thing on linebackers and move on. But like, to me, Colson's a green dot. Like, he's somebody you can let him be the communicator and be the nerve center for your defense. That to me, like, he has a very defined role of what he's going to do. Edgerrin Cooper, to me, where he goes determines everything. Like,
yeah.
I've made the case, like, you give him, he gets his mission. You give him his marching orders and his mission before the snap. And irregardless of what happens, you carry out the mission. Okay. You are a run and hit player. Like, this is your assignment. We are not asking you to sift and sort. We're not asking you to wear the green dot. We're not asking you to communicate everything to your teammates. Literally, you are a seek and destroy player. That's how you're going to play. Or you are matched up with him on this play, and you're covering the tight end. But I think if he goes somewhere and they bog him down, I don't think you're going to be happy with the results you get as a player there. But I think we've probably exhausted the linebacker running back discussion. I think we've probably lost some attention here. So I'm going to do the popular thing before we take a break. I want to do one more quarterback thing, and then we'll take a quick break here. But I tweeted this out the other day, but if you're going to rank, I'm going to make you the agent of every single quarterback in this draft. And I'm going to say, you get to cherry pick of the quarterback teams, and let's limit it. Let's 13 is as far down as we're going to go. So we have quarterback alley with 13, 12 and 11. And then we go all the way up to the Bears. But if I was going to say your top three most desirable quarterback locations for your client, how would you rank them 1, 2, and 3?
This is fun. So I think there's two teams that are clearly at the top, and it's crazy that one of them is actually the first team, because that obviously never happens. I would probably still go Minnesota over Chicago, to be honest, just because of the skill players, play caller, good offensive line. But then I'm going Chicago at number two. I think that those to me are the clear 1-2 of the quarterback teams. I'm looking at, we called it quarterback alley.
Yeah, it's a little quarterback alley.
I like 11, it.
12, 13.
Tricky. Okay, so Washington, like the skill players, not the offensive line. Questions about the play caller. New England is not good. Giants, not good. And then Minnesota, or Denver and Vegas.
It's
Denver,
really the decision there, right?
Yeah. Vegas is getsy. I'm factoring play caller as well.
The first two are easy.
The first two are easy. Okay, like, so let's say I'm Bo Nix, and I rather be drafted by the Raiders or the Broncos? It's tricky. I think I would actually lean Denver because of Sean Payton. I know that might not be a popular answer. Obviously, Vegas is better. You have Davante Adams, but yeah, I'd rather play with Sean Payton.
What would you do, Buck? How would you rank them? 1, 2, 3?
No, look, I think you guys have kind of hit it. The thing about the Broncos, I love the play calling, Sean Payton, but then I look around the weapons. I'm like, man, what are we doing? Like, we got Courtland Sutton. He wants a contract extension. We have Mims. I just don't know if it's enough to be able to do it. How about?
But you the same at the top? Would you go Minnesota over Chicago, like 1-2?
100%, because I like both guys on the outside. I like Jordan Addison and Jefferson. I think Kevin O'Connell has a special gift when it comes to calling plays. I think he made the game very easy for Kirk Cousins, so I'm believing that he can do that for a young quarterback. I'll be honest with you, Chicago, I don't know how great Shane Waldron is as a play caller. Like, no disrespect, but I don't know how good that's going to look in the Windy City with a young quarterback. need more time to evaluate.
I think I'm a little higher on him, but I mean,
I'm just saying,
Competing against in this conversation? He's not competing against all you know, no, the other, but like, 31 but like, teams. But no, and this collection of teams, I think he stacks up pretty good.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, behind Kevin O'Connell, that's all I'm saying. So that's where we're at. Like, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying in the conversation, I think Kevin O'Connell is over Shane Waldron. And then the other guys don't have the firepower to be able to do it. The Saints, I mean, you're talking about the Saints, the Broncos.
Yeah, to me, if you tell me that the Raiders take a tackle with their 13th pick and then come back in to get said quarterback, then I move them over the Broncos I'm just going to throw indoors to Devontae Adams and like life is not that bad at that point in time. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in, to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Mina, I hit you up on this one. This is something we always do during this time of the year, and the teams I've worked with, it started with the Ravens, and it's kind of spread around the league a little bit. But we had we would have a red star, black dot ceremony. So at the very end of the process, you have your actual cards. Now they have to be put on their screen, which is not nearly as much fun as the magnetized cards up on the wall. But we would take a little sticker, like you would get as a kindergartner growing up, with the little red star. And each scout got to go put one red star on a player in their area that was their favorite player that they wanted to bring into the building. Didn't have to be the best player. It could be a 6th round player, but just someone that you loved and you thought, you know, this was my person. So we did the red star. The black dot was the opposite of somebody you do not want. We're not going to do that here. We're going to keep it positive. So we're just going to do the red star ceremony. So, and I'll give you a couple. I'll give you as many. You want to go 3 red stars, 3 of just your favorite players that you think are going to be really good pros.
Okay. So when you said red star to me, when you texted that to me, I nodded like I knew what that meant, but I think I misunderstood. I was like, oh, okay. I thought you meant like can't miss. And I have like probably 5 players who I view that way in this draft, okay. but favorites is very different. Favorites is a different discussion.
Like you want your team to get this player because they're going to be fun to watch and you believe in them.
Ah, interesting. Okay. So I'm going to stay out of the very top of the draft because I don't want to be too obvious then.
We all can agree Roma Dunze should be everyone's favorite player. Let's just move on. Okay.
There's so many Huskies. I mean, I've been seeing your colleague Peter Schrager has been talking a lot about Jalen
Rosengarten.
Polk.
He's on Rosengarten and Polk, and I've seen McMillan get some last minute love here.
Jalen McMillan. Yeah,
it was really. We'll never have that again. Sad. As a Huskies fan. Okay, so I'm going to personal faves. I'll go with a defensive player that I was just tweeting about him. I love Johnny Newton. I could just watch him all day. I have Murphy over him for because of the strength, athleticism, really. And I get it. I think they're both great. But there's just something about a player who's like a little bit undersized, but knows how to use his leverage to his advantage on every play. And that I find just so eminently watchable. Maybe it's because I've been personally victimized by Aaron Donald as a human being for so long as a Seahawks fan. But I love how hot his motor runs. I love his hand usage. I love his first step. I think his size, I think it doesn't show up in ways that make me concerned about him. I love the way he takes over football games on that Illinois team. I think he gives you versatility on the defensive line. It's very easy for me to imagine him having success at the next level.
I like it. Let's go around the horn, Buck. We'll just go around a couple times here, a couple spins. So go ahead.
Okay, it's my red star player.
Yeah. Who do we got?
Oh, Cooper DeJean from Iowa.
Woo!
He is my favorite player. I mean, I would make the argument that he might be the best defender in the draft just because of all the different things that he can do. Like, DJ, I'm a fan because he can play outside. He can play in the slot. He can play safety. When you watch him play, his technique, his tools and talent are terrific. High IQ. He can return punts. Iowa has a reputation for producing players that succeed. I mean, they excel in the league from the secondary. You think about Micah Hyde and some of the other guys. To me, man, I can't see this guy failing in the league. I think he's a star waiting to happen.
I was talking to somebody last night about it with the team, and it was funny because he was saying he was a pretty heated debate with him and another player, and he was on the DeJean side of things. And his point was, which is a good one, which is the fun one, which was like, hey, your guy pokes the ball away. Like, that's great. I love that. My guy not only catches it, he's likely to score with it. And oh, by the way, with the return game changing, he might win us one game as a returner next year. And so it's like when you start tie breaking and players are closely graded, he's got a lot of things that go in his favor. Even though the fact he hasn't played much safety, like all of his stuff looks like it translates very easily there. But and the intelligence to be able to move around and do different things with him. Yeah, I think he's a fun player. And I think if you have a plan for him, you're going to be stoked. I don't know if I'm just drafting him and leaving him outside and saying you're just going to be.
I think it's also the influence of, look, we always are kind of go back to our past. I just remember Eric Weddle, and I remember watching Eric Weddle and really liking him, but not really going hard in meetings saying, hey, man, this dude can play at a high level. And then you watch him have the career that he had. And I was like, man, I sat there and saw it at Utah. Like, he was the best player on the field. He did everything. Cooper reminds me of Eric Weddle in that capacity. Not that I'm going to sit him outside. I think he plays somewhere inside moving around and just gives you a lot of versatility and a lot of playmaking.
One of the things that we always did in Baltimore, which I think was, you could see it in those defenses, we paid extra emphasis to DBs when they got the ball. Like Ed was obviously the hero of that bunch. But when we were evaluating players, it meant more in our meeting room. If you had pick sixes, if you had scoop and scores, if you had sacks and forced fumbles, like there was another layer to that of like, oh, we're going to play offense with our defense. So just getting the sack, just getting the pass breakup, even just getting the interception, like we were always wanting. And part of it's because our offense wasn't very good. We needed that from our defense. But like there was that extra level to that, which I always think, you know, you give a little love, a little extra credence to that. We also liked offensive linemen who could tackle because we were going to throw some interceptions. So neither here nor there. For me on the red star thing, again, I mentioned if I was going to go up at the top, it would be Roma Dunze. For me, if I'm going to go outside of that group, Mike Sammer still is easy just because.
He's so good.
I mean,
I have not met anyone who doesn't like Mike Sammer still.
Well, first of all, like not a fan. The guy's the leadership character, CEO, all the words you want to use to describe him. If you've heard him talk, like you get it. There's a reason why they say he was kind of leading the charge here with this team and this turnaround that they've been on at Michigan. But besides that, I'm a believer in the Johnny on the spot theory of scouting, which there's no science behind, but anytime there's a ball on the ground, this guy is next to it. And it's like, and the ball pops up in the air. It's in this guy's lap. Like in some ways that's a skill. Like not only just someone who's forcing things to happen, but someone who is always in the right place at the right time. And the action just kind of finds him. All that kind of put together, I think you get a really great kid in a very defined role. He is a nickel only. That is what he is and who he is, but he's very good in that role and he can tackle like a son of a gun.
I mentioned earlier, I did the 2018 draft recap with Bill. So Sanders still, it's Mike Hilton. Everybody compares him to Mike Hilton. He looks like Mike Hilton. He plays like Mike Hilton. He's used like Mike Hilton. I totally forgot Mike Hilton was a first round draft pick until that? I look back at that. Right? Yeah. I totally forgot that until we revisited that draft. But it is, it's one of those comps that's so obvious. It's just right, I feel like.
Round two. Let's go one more round through, Mina. I'll give you one more red star.
I'm not going to go Polk because I already mentioned him and I'm trying to avoid UW. I'm a huge Ladd McConkey person. He's just going to be a good NFL player. I don't know. He's one of those players. Like I would be more surprised if he wasn't successful than if he was, for a litany of reasons. I love his suddenness. I love how quickly he wins at the line of scrimmage. I love the way he tempos his routes. I think size is an issue, but he uses his frame well. He has just got such a great feel for finding the voids in zone. He can beat, and he can win in man. I think he has inside-outside versatility that's underrated. He is not slot only, in my estimation. I think on the right team, he's just going to catch a million passes. Mm-hmm.
Look, I love that. I love that. He's one of my favorites. I dig that. Let's go. DJ knows because I've talked about him the last 2 weeks incessantly. I can't stop talking about Will Shipley from Clemson being another
you
one
love
of my
Will Shipley, man.
Man, because really? DJ, DJ, I'm telling you, okay, hear me now, fear me later. I'm just telling you, the dude has some stuff to him that in the right offense, he is going to be a problem. And the comparison that was made to me today was, think of him like Kevin Falk when Kevin Falk was in the New England Patriots. And he's the third down back. He comes off the bench. He does all the screen game. He gives you a little bit of the run game, but as a wide receiver. I think there's something to him. And in a class of, I would say, nondescript running backs, to me, I can sell a role for him easily when I'm talking to the coach and gentlemen. We bring him in. He's going to do X, Y, and Z, and this is how he's going to get his production. To me, he's easy to do.
He was one of those guys when, like, his first year at Clemson, and you're just kind of casually watching on a Saturday, and you're like, he jumps out, he's the white running back at Clemson. Like, who's this guy? This guy's pretty good. And you look him up, and you're like, oh, he was like a big time recruit. And then it's just he kind of felt like he drifted through, had some injuries, and then when you go on and start studying him this year, I'm like, no, he's a good player. And in a running back class where. I literally talked to somebody last night and I was like, who are your top three running backs? And like, for me, they would have been like 10, 11, and 12. Their grades are everywhere on this quarterback class. Like the least consensus possible.
What was the most surprising one to you?
Well, I don't love Braylon Allen. And he was, I think he was like his first or second guy.
Really?
And the South Dakota State running back was way, way, way up there. So again, they're all over the map. And there's people that love Texas. I like Marshawn Lloyd is my favorite of the bunch. But yeah, and anyways, it's one of the quick side note here. As much as I love PFF and being able to sort all this video and watch all of it, the only cautionary tale that I'll have there. Is always be a little bit skeptical of the fumble numbers because when you see running backs with fumble numbers in college, I hear people like eviscerate some of these guys and I'm like, have you watched them? Okay. Two of them are on mesh where you're going to tell me is the quarterback or the running back? Cause I can't tell when I'm watching that, who screwed that up. Some of them are on a toss. That's like over his back shoulder where he doesn't catch it. And it's like, some of these fumbles that get attributed to these guys, they're not all created equal here. So I would be, that's my one little cautionary nugget there. But my last one, I'm going to go Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky. He's the best run after catch receiver in the draft. He does. I mean, this average, I think his average air yards is literally like 5 yards. Like it's the lowest in the entire draft class. They do not let him get down the field. But I thought when you watch him at the Senior Bowl, he has that ability. I think just because he hasn't done it, doesn't mean he can't. He wasn't used that way. And I think his literal bio on his social media is the Yak King with the crown. And I'm like, Yes, yes, he is the Yak King, and we shall call him as such. But he's going to be one I think he'll go in the third or fourth round. Again, I like guys that come in clear packaging. I know how to use him and what he is, and I think he's somebody that can win and be successful at the next level.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That was healthy. That was a healthy discussion. My favorite, Mina, real quick, before we let you run, my favorite black dot story. We had a player in Baltimore where a linebacker, Buck, I've told you this. We had, so he was somebody we thought would be a second round pick. So we have the black dot ceremony. This is just the scouts, right? So it's just the scouts. And so we go through, he's not a great character. We don't want, he's just, let somebody else pick him. Boom, stick the black dot on him. So third round goes by, fourth round goes by, fifth round goes by. Get a new card. Get him a new card. Take the black dot off. It's the sixth round. Like, he's been punished enough. We're like, we can't take him with the owner's going to go, why does this guy have a black dot on his card? Like, just get him a new card.
So did you end up?
We took him in the sixth round. I'll tell you off air. He hung around for a little bit, not long, but yeah.
Now my mind is racing as to who. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Yeah,
anyways. Oh, Mina, you are the best. I appreciate you taking some time for us. I know it's a crazy time of year, but it's always great to visit with you.
It's good to see you guys. Odunze, no matter what, got to make the
okay. Where do you want him to go? As a dude, like, okay. I'm invested in his success as well. So, but where do you want him to go?
This is sacrilege from me because I am a trade down, accumulate picks, Thaler Massey believer. I routinely criticize teams who trade up for non-quarterbacks. That said, I really think the Bills should put in a call and give up a first and go up and get him. He's just exactly what they need. And I think for players where I have like a high degree of conviction in them and you have the, you see how much these wide receivers are making. If you have a receiver who can be a top 10 receiver in the NFL and is making, you know, under $10 million a year, the savings that you would get from it, I think you have to consider that when you're baking in the cost of moving up in the draft. And I've said this to you, I just don't see a world in which Rome Odunze isn't a star in the NFL.
I love that. When I think of the Buffalo Bills, I think of is it Van Halen? Right now, there's no tomorrow. Like the song.
Come on. Yeah. No, you're right. Yes. You're right.
Blaring in my ears. Like.
Yes. Do it. Come on, Brandon.
That would be fun. That would be fun. We need some fireworks on draft night. Hopefully we get some. All right. She's the best. Mina, we appreciate you coming on. And we'll see you. You're going to be in Detroit, right?
I will. We'll be there. I'll see you there.
Okay. We'll see you in Detroit. Thank you. All right, Buck, that was fun. Mina is someone who's obviously, she's really smart. Mm-hmm. She does her work and always good to get some other ideas, especially as you get late in the process. You know, I think we kind of know where each other are on a lot of these things. So it's fun to have a new voice come in there and get some new thoughts on everything.
Yeah, no, it's great, man. It's great scrimmaging different ideas and different thoughts, and her analytical background certainly adds some a layer to it. But it's always fun. I think some of the best things about these meetings, these draft meetings, are the conversations that you have that either kind of confirm your own thoughts or challenge your thoughts and make you kind of go back and really prove your point to your peers. I love that part.
Man, no doubt. Anything else cooking here before we get out of here?
Nah, man. Look, it's the week before we getting up to it. You're almost done. I'm kind of ready. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like, no all question. Right, ready to have the baby. Let's see where everyone's going to go and let's talk about it that way.
Yeah, I've got to put together my top 150 by the end of the day. So that's my assignment to finish that little project up. And then you end up inevitably being like, I have spent a lot of time figuring out where to put Ben Sennett. Like how high up I should have the
HVAC
move tight end from Kansas.
Just wears
State.
You out. You're just gnashing over these last. I would imagine the last 25 picks are just like, oh, here we go. I got to pick one.
At the end of the day, we don't have to make the picks. You know, there's some freedom in that. As much as we enjoyed our time in the league, there is a little bit of freedom in that. I do want to remind everybody, we'll be back Monday with an episode. I'll be in Detroit. We are going to have Graham Barton on, who I think's got a chance to be a top 20 pick. So we'll get a chance to visit with him and then dig into all the last minute things we're hearing and thinking about as we get towards the draft. All right, Buck. It's been fun, man. Good to see you, buddy. And I'll catch up with you on Monday. That's it for us here. We'll see you next time on Move the Sticks. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.